Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right, we are back with another episode of the Real Estate Investing Club. Today we have Kurt Warner with us from the other coast in Toronto, Canada, other coast in the other country. Over there in Toronto, Canada, Kurt is a multifamily guy and a coach in multifamily. He is from Thrive Community. I am super excited to dive into this. Kurt, thanks for hopping on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. I told you before we got on here, we like stories. We like to hear how people got to where they are. So why don't you take us back to the beginning? How'd you get started in real estate?
Well, my journey in real estate actually began while I was in university, although I didn't realize it. So my mom had always invested in, you know, not only our own family home, but also had like another property that she'd rented out. So she decided to live the dream when I went away to school and moved to the U.S. Virgin Islands. Oh, so wow. I was left managing a condo that was about an hour and a half away from where I went to school. So I learned through the School of Hard Knocks how to manage property and how to deal with tenants, and did that while I was there for 4 years. And right after school, I left in 2004 and decided to get a job before graduating, and was working there for 2 months. And one day I went into my boss's office and thought it was a typical pep talk, motivation for the day, because I was doing sales at the time, and she fired me. So it was a harsh realization that there's no such thing as job security, no matter what age you are. And so I tried to figure out what I wanted to do, kind of next steps. So actually was at a wedding with my girlfriend at the time, and her best friend knew she traveled a lot throughout Canada, US. And she worked for a company that taught people how to invest in real estate and also the stock market. So I'm like, I need a job, and told her about, you know, I manage properties, and fortunately got the job and spent a few years just working, and then decided that it was time to invest and get into real estate for myself. So partnered with a few people I worked with. Unfortunately, we were young and dumb and didn't take the advice and education that we were a part of. And we actually lost money on our first deal. It was a foreclosure property not too far from us. And we just didn't stage it, bought it well, didn't stage it, didn't hire the right agent to sell it for us. And so I left real estate. I said, real estate doesn't work. I'm tired of this.
And that's so the thing that people got to, I always on the show, I like to say that you got to make sure your first deal works, because that's going to give you the motivation. It's going to give you that, you know, that thing that you can look at and be like, all right, this works, this model works, we can make this go forward. So it's the exact reason why you need a mentor, because mentors will make sure that that first deal works. All right, I jumped into your story, keep going.
No worries. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You do need a mentor and a coach, especially for that first one, so you don't make those mistakes. So I ended up leaving real estate for a few years. From 2009 to 2017, I traded stocks, options, and Forex. But I did it right, and I got a mentor and coach and took training throughout that time. But then when I had kids, I realized that, you know, trading didn't allow me to leave anything as far as a legacy or anything like that. So myself and two of my very good friends, we formed a company back in 2018. And our goal was to invest in multifamily properties up here in Canada. So that's what we've been doing since then.
Nice, man. I love it. It's cool that you came, you know, you came back to real estate. You didn't let that first failure kind of keep you down. So when you 2018, that was, you know, one of the, it's a great time to buy, because, you know, 2019, 2020, 2021, those years, things just hockey sticked. So what did you guys, when you first started to look into multifamily, well, first, why did you choose multifamily? And then tell us about the first deal that you bought. Like what, how'd you find it? All that stuff.
So we chose multifamily because our goal, you know, from the beginning was cash flow. You know, so we are all, you know, we're working, we all had our, you know, 9 to 5s. So we didn't necessarily want to get into like flipping properties. We didn't want to get into dealing with like lease options. So multifamily was kind of our niche. And we started looking at different markets because we're outside of Toronto. So prices here, we can't find a cash flowing multifamily here traditionally. Seattle. Yeah, pretty much any major city. If you're in North America, it's tough to actually find
anywhere on the coast. Yeah.
So we started looking at other markets. So analyzing, you know, population, looking at the average price per unit, how much people are paying in rent. So we picked an area called Sudbury, which is about 4 hours from where I am. So one thing that I know talking to people, especially that are new getting into investing, there's that fear of, oh, I can't invest if I can't go and see the place and touch it and visit it every day. I'm like, are you investing because you want to, you know, that you're looking for cash flow, or are you investing so you can go and drive by the place that you own? Well, if you're looking for cash flow, then it doesn't matter where it is as long as the numbers work. So our first deal,
I had an old mentor who he would always say that real estate investing is only three things. It's numbers, documents, and people. Outside of that, those are the only three things that you're dealing with in real estate. You technically don't even need to go to the property. You can have people go out there, do the, I always say, you know, check out a property. If you're going to buy a property, you definitely want to put feet on the ground, your own feet on the ground, to make sure that you like it. But you don't have to. I mean, it really is just those three things. So again, I jumped in your story. Keep going.
No worries. So we actually did go up because it was our first one. We actually had a accepted offer on a 10-unit property. And so we had a realtor that I kind of met, you know, just going through the MLS. That had this property listed. So he actually was on vacation in Florida. And we're talking about January, February in Canada, Northern Canada. So he flew back from vacation to show us this property and a few others in the market. And so we actually passed on that one, the 10 unit one, just because it didn't really fit our business model in terms of we wanted something for our first one to be somewhat turnkey. This one needed some work. So we did find a sixplex that we ended up closing on. And that was in April 1st, actually. It's coming up to 4 years ago, April 1st, 2019, we closed on our first 6-unit property. And it was a nice one because not only did we have cash flow from obviously the tenants, but we worked with an amazing property manager that he also introduced us to. And there was a little shed out front. So we rented that to one of the tenants. We had parking in the back and there were commercial properties behind us. So ended up renting out a couple spaces to, I think it was a lawyer's office, rented a couple spaces there. And the previous owner had put solar on the roof. Hmm. And then we also added laundry income. So we had multiple streams of income from one property, which was awesome. So cash flowed very well. So that was our first deal. And that time we had success working with the right team and everything. So we kept going from there.
Nice. And it sounds like you guys, when it comes to your business model, you're not looking for, you, on the multifamily side, you're not looking to do the flips. You want something that is turnkey. You want to be able to buy it and then just rent it out for the cash flow.
Well, that was initially. And then as we got more into it, then like we've done somewhat of the burst strategy, you know, more so with multifamily. But out of the gate, yeah, I'd say anybody new starting out, it's nice to know that you're, unless you haven't have experience doing rehab work, working with contractors, especially if you're in a different market than yourself, as turnkey as possible. You know, if it's like paint and all that kind of stuff, that's fine. But you don't want to get into anything really structural for your first one. Moving on from there, absolutely, especially as you start to build out the right team with your property manager, contractors, et cetera.
Yep. And one of the reasons why I like multifamily, you know, I'm not in multifamily. I do mobile home RV parks and self storage, but I always have wanted to do multifamily because there are so many additional revenue streams that you can add to a property. I've heard some pretty cool ones. Laundry is a common one, but it's something an RV park we own here in Washington State we've considered putting a laundry facility at the campsite, but I just feel like it's too much of a headache. So what's been your experience with adding a laundry, you know, on-site laundry to a multifamily?
On-site laundry is being good. Now, if you're investing in a property that's obviously outside of the market where you're not the one going and collecting the cash, then you do want to consider either A, having machines that are, you know, use credit card. So you're not, you know, worried about the cash aspect of somebody stealing the cash and things like that. Or you have to have a really strong relationship with your property manager and trust. obviously, that, you know, they are going in and collecting it. We've run into an issue, for example, where, you know, we have tenants in a building where one tenant's saying, oh, we pay $1.25 for dryer, but wash is free. And we're like, how is that the case? So you just have to keep an eye on it, obviously, but it is a nice additional passive income stream.
Yep. And how many units did you add to the property?
So as far as adding like rental units or in terms of
laundry? We're still talking laundry. Yeah.
I mean, so the laundry, we only had one.
We only had, one of each.
Yeah. We only needed one because it was only 6 units. Other properties that we have, I think there's one that we have, and I'm horrible at this. My partners always make fun of me. Like literally, I will see a picture of a property that we have purchased and I'm like, we own that. Because I just look at numbers, analyze the data, and let my partners worry about the cosmetic and all that kind of stuff. So I think we have one that has 2 washers, 2 dryers.
Okay. Yeah. So what are the other, you mentioned storage as one other stream of revenue that you guys like to add. Love to hear that. And then it sounded like there were commercial sites on, or commercial retail on the property, or what were you renting there? I didn't really catch that.
So we are renting parking.
Oh, okay. Parking for the commercial building
across the commercial buildings behind us. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So it's nice. Yeah. It's nice to get creative when it comes to just looking for value add, really. Like I know other investors, we haven't done it ourselves, but obviously with internet. So, you know, if you go to an internet provider, you pay one rate for your entire building, you can charge your tenants, you know, per month for access to internet, which is actually saving them money on a monthly basis, but it's more revenue for you. So there are different ways that you definitely can be creative. Like if you have a property, for example, it can be multifamily, even self storage, where you have acreage, where you have maybe visibility, maybe you have a billboard, you know, that can generate additional revenue for you as well. Cell towers could be another one, again, depending on the property. But I think anytime that we look at investing in multifamily, we look at, okay, outside of just the rental income from tenants, what else can we do? Is there a garage that we can then turn into storage? If there's not, you know, storage on site, can we look at something maybe off site? But always have to be creative when you're looking at multifamily, especially now with rates, you know, going higher, where it is harder to find cash flowing properties, that other streams of income are going to be more important.
Yep, absolutely. So what are you guys doing today? What's your bread and butter on the, you know, in the market today?
Right now it is trying to find property and work with sellers that are motivated. you know, when we started in 2018, 19, and through the past few years, we're in an extremely low interest rate environment, properties cash flow, but at the same time, we're also looking at bidding wars on properties because everything cash flow, everybody wanted to invest. Now it's slowed down, at least up here it has. So we're looking even further outside of, you know, kind of that secondary market and going into more tertiary markets where, you know, there's one deal that we're looking at, the town has a population of 700.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But
so let's stay on that topic for a second, because that's something, you know, I have criteria when I buy. Generally, I like to be in a, even if it's a tertiary market, or a secondary market, I like it to be 50,000 or more in population. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, there's so many different strategies you can go after. Some people like to focus on those populations that are like 1,000, 2,000, 500, whatever it is, the really small towns. So what, kind of walk me through your guys' thought process when it comes to selecting a market, even when it is really small. How do you know that that market will be, How do you feel safe in a small market that's under 1,000 population?
So if we're looking at a population like that, we're looking at what industries are there. So is there just one plant or one business and that's where everybody works? So there's more risk. Yeah. If it has more diversity, then we're a little safe. And how close it is maybe to a larger town as well. Because what's happened is prices have obviously gone up, you know, throughout the past few years. Interest rates are higher. So you have people that are looking at, maybe they can't afford where they live now, but they like the general area. So maybe they look at moving 45 minutes, maybe up to an hour outside of where they are to find something that's more affordable. So if the population isn't you know, shrinking from like, it's gone from 1,000 to 700 in the past couple of years. If it's just being kind of stable, maybe going up slightly at that 700, and it just happens to be a small town that has multiple industries, relatively close to a hospital, then it's an area where, or mining is, which is kind of where we are. So, you know, more stable in terms of jobs, people will always be going there because, you know, mines actually have a fairly long lifespan. So we're more comfortable in markets like that. But just like you, initially when we started, we were looking at 50,000 plus, easier to finance as well. But those places where, you know, when we started, we were paying maybe 75,000 per door, are now 125, 150,000 a door, where, you know, places that are smaller in population, you can find areas that are pretty good for, you know, 50,000 a door, and the rents are still, you know, pretty strong. So there's more opportunity for cash flow, even at these higher rates.
So if I were kind of to distill your small population investing criteria, it sounds like you guys require positive net migration. You need to have the population to be growing, right? You're not going to invest in any population that has a negative net migration.
Yep.
And then you want, is a hospital, is that a criteria that you have? Like, it has to be within X number of miles of a hospital, or is that just nice to have?
It is definitely a nice to have. It just gives more assurances in terms of, okay, well, you know, if the hospital is really far away, especially if you're looking at a population that could be somewhat aging or, you know, new and they're having kids, they'll probably at some point want to move somewhat closer to a hospital. So that is something that definitely is on our radar when we're kind of looking at the Google Maps and trying to figure out, okay, well, how far away are hospital? How far away are jobs? What industries are there? What's the businesses like? Are businesses opening? Are they shutting down? So there's all these factors that we want to look at in smaller markets that we don't necessarily consider when we're looking at, you know, more of the secondary markets, because they will have a hospital. They will have, you know, typically have multiple businesses, and the economy is going to be a little bit more stable traditionally.
Yeah. Yeah. I use the Walmart rule of thumb. If it's within a 10-minute driving distance of a Walmart, I'm like, it's probably pretty good.
Yep.
And then the third one is the industry. It has to have a solid industry. You know, that's pretty generic. There's a lot of industries out there. Is there any industry that you steer clear from? Like, if most of the population is employed by the government, although the government's usually pretty stable, is there government, what type of industry do you look for?
Government is definitely stable. Mining, just where we are, because we're in Northern Ontario, is definitely one that we look at. You know, farming is okay as long as it's not the only industry that they have. That's just typically where we are in terms of the market. I actually have one of my business partners with Thrive Community. They have 27 unit building in a town of 1,000 people. But the industry that they have, and there's one main one, is the largest blueberry producing plant for Canada. So it's where everybody works and likely not going anywhere at this stage.
Yeah, man, I like blueberries. All right, I love it. Well, thank you for kind of taking us through your guys' criteria there. We are kind of running down the clock, but before we did that, I did want to talk a little bit about your coaching program. You got one. It sounds like you help people get into, like, new investors get into multifamily. Run us through the program. What is it that you guys do? What do you offer? All that stuff.
So we formed a community called Thrive Community because we wanted to be not about us, but about people. And we actually help either people that have never invested or are new to investor, and even some seasoned investors. I think between myself, my business partner, and the mentors and trainers that we have, there's at least 50 years, if not more, of experience investing in real estate. And we cover everything from wholesale, creative finance, multifamily, lease options, land development, short-term rental, essentially you name it, we are connected with a trainer that can teach it. So we're just here to help. We do coaching, mentoring, and we also do classes.
Awesome. Love it. And we'll plug all the URLs at the end here, but that has run down the clock. It is time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
I hope so.
Well, let's do it. It starts with education. I'm a big bookie, so give me two recommendations, one for general life wisdom, one for real estate specific.
Okay, one for general wisdom. I would say, I want to be a little bit different. I would say one I read recently, $100 Million Offers by Alex Hormozi. So if anybody that wants to be an entrepreneur, whether you're in real estate or just in general, I think there's a lot of great wisdom in that book. Real estate wise, I would say the one that really inspired me in the beginning was Unfair Advantage by Robert Kiyosaki. I think his other books get more recognition, like Rich Dad Poor Dad, obviously, but Unfair Advantage was really the one that resonated with me.
Very cool. I bought that Alex Hormozi, or however you say his last name. I bought that book. I haven't jumped into it yet, but I've heard good things.
It is really good.
All right, moving on to the next question, and this is for your younger self. So let's go back to the Kurt who had, let's say he just failed that first deal. He was kicking himself. Go back to him, look him in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Do one more.
There you go. Do one more. I love it. Don't give up. I feel like that's the underlying message there is even when shit hits the fan, it will. It's going to hit the fan. And so just keep moving forward. Eventually, you'll make it out. It moves us to the third question, and this is about your business. Our businesses are based on the people that run it. So what are the first three positions you hired for? And if you hired today, would you do it differently in the order that you hired them?
I think the first three positions that we hired for ourselves, property manager, social media, and third one, contractor. Would I do it differently? Some of the people, yeah, I would definitely do differently. But I would have definitely taken more time to find a better social media person because brand is everything. So if you have the proper branding, it opens so many more doors, so many more connections to help your business grow.
Yep. And on the social media front, what were you guys hiring for? Were you hiring them to create shorts
to really do all the creative posting and everything involved when it comes to social media and branding? And just did not hire the right person.
Yeah, it is amazing once you have some branding behind you, what that does. I didn't realize that until I started this podcast, actually. And sellers started to talk to me differently because they saw I had a podcast. Mm-hmm. And there's that authority, I guess, behind having some kind of brand. And so I do like that. I'm going to move us on, though. And this is about, usually I say the United States, but you're in Canada. So we're going to open it up to the entire North America. It's a big place, a lot of square miles out there, a lot of metros to invest in. So what is the metro you're most excited about investing in today?
The metro I'm most excited about investing today. I would probably, again, I go back to Northern Ontario. So we're looking at, north of Timmins. I think there's a lot of opportunity up there for cash flow. I think there's also opportunity to get into self-storage, so looking at more, places that are close by lakes as well, short-term rentals. So looking for those really hidden gems, because when we started investing, we were told we're crazy for the market that we picked, but it's worked out extremely well for us. And now everybody's in that market. So we're heading out and looking for the next one.
There you go. When other people zig, you zag. All right, that moves us to the second to last question. This is about mentors. None of us are islands. We all stand on the shoulders of giants. So who is one mentor who has contributed significantly to your career today?
I have a couple mentors. I would like to shout out one from a business standpoint in my career when I was young, Ian Edwards out of the UK. He taught me a lot about people, how to manage people, how to create relationships. So that's translated into real estate as well, but definitely in my professional career prior to that. And then from a real estate standpoint, I would say a lot of people I know have the same one, and it's Pip Stelic. He actually has a training company in the US as well, but he has helped and mentored people all over the world and has definitely inspired a lot of us to keep going.
All right. I love it. And I lied. This is the second to last question. What is your favorite way to find good deals?
My favorite way to find good deals is to wait for somebody to reach out to me with an opportunity, whether it's a realtor, a wholesaler. When we started, I was pounding the pavement, so to speak, on MLS and everywhere. And I think I looked at over 100 deals before we got to one. So now it's just building those relationships and leveraging kind of that social capital where people are like, hey, you know, do you want to look at this deal? Do you want to look at that deal? So that's it.
Goes back to branding. Love it. All right. And that leads us to the very last question. This one's for the listeners. You've given us a lot to think about. I'm sure people want to reach out, maybe get in contact with your mentorship program. What is the best way for them to do that?
So if you look up Thrive Community on Facebook, that is a good way to reach us. Or you can always email me at kurt@thrivecommunity.ca. Shoot me an email and happy to help and hop on a call just to figure out if, you know, what we have can help you grow. And our community is free as well. So if you just want to join some like-minded individuals, talk real estate and learn more, join.
All right. And I'll put those links in the show notes. So if y'all want to reach out to Kurt, get involved in the Thrive community, go ahead and click the little more in the description. It'll pull down the full description. And in there, you can find Kurt's URLs. All right, Kurt, that wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thank you very much, Gabe.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. If you guys have any questions whatsoever, reach out to me, Gabe, at therealestateinvestingclub.com. And if you guys want to support the show, all we ask is you throw us a like, subscribe, share, all that jazz. Other than that, I hope you guys have an absolutely fantastic week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.